Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Powered by Righteous Media.
Ladies and gentlemen, independent Americans around the country and around the world. Spring is finally here. At least it's supposed to be here in most places. A time of hope and optimism and color and life. And we need it right now. And I think in America, we need our guest in this episode, a man who is a true treasure to our nation, a voice of conscience, and a person I am very honored and humbled to call a friend. The great and powerful Ken Burns is back on Independent Americans. Welcome back, sir.
It's great to be with you, my friend, Paul. So great. I can tell you right now, there's 2 feet of snow out there. So it may be indicative of our mood that northern New England, New Hampshire, where I am, is a bit paralyzed. We've gotten out of it, but the weekend was dicey, including the leak out of my smoke detector into a pot on the floor. And we're now scraping the snow off to try to find the source of it, but it doesn't keep the thing from going off every 4 hours. So I feel like I've just gone from a 70-year-old man to someone with a newborn baby who has to be woken up of, 3 or 4 times a night.
I think that's a reflection for America right now, Ken, right?
I think we need significant babysitting right now.
Well, and we need statesmen and elders who can take us through it. And I put you in that rare category where you help us understand who we are and where we are and where we're going. You and I have a number of chats and I'm always privileged to have them. But can I start by asking you what I ask everyone, Ken? Where are you and how are you?
I am in the loft of my barn, built to be an inhabited by human space, where I have spent most of COVID and do lots of editing with monitors all around me. I'm with my executive producer, who is right now a polar bear on an iceberg, but that is Chester. Hey, Chester, say hi to Paul. Yeah. Okay.
We remember Chester from last time. It's great to have Chester back again.
Chester's back. I'm doing okay. I'm worried about my country. I had an interesting conversation. A lot of my kids, I have grown kids and smaller kids, and my grown kids are all sort of working out some sort of alternative passport thing. And they said, "Dad, come and do it with us." And I said, "You know, I'm staying here, and I have to go down with the ship, I guess. And I don't want that ship to go down. But I think the fact that I just said what I just said is incredibly telling. People who are engaged in history are normally enormously optimistic because, people say history repeats itself. It never has. Mark Twain is supposed to have said history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. If he did say that, it is perfect. Ecclesiastes, which is the Old Testament, said what has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. That's saying that human nature doesn't change. And so it doesn't. And that usually inspirits you to say, when people say, have we been through this before? And I can pick myriad of examples that resemble this in a little bit, but the sort of the entire set of ingredients and the stakes have put us in what I think is, we had 3 great crises before this moment. The Civil War, pretty obvious, the Depression, and the Second World War. In those crises, the peaceful transfer of power, the independence of the judiciary, free and fair elections, were never in question. Even in the middle of Civil War, Lincoln ran against somebody and won re-election and wasn't expected, but he came from behind and won. Right now, none of those things are happening. And so we're in what I think is the greatest crisis we have ever been in as a nation. I do believe we have the resources and the will to be able to overcome these obstacles. But in an age of disinformation, where the lies gets around the world three times before the truth gets started, it has made our job much more difficult. The medium of social media has, which is of course not social, it's all an independent activity, has made us all into kind of, and promoted the idea that we're independent free agents. The essence of a democracy is that we are citizens. This is an active collective participation. So Jefferson, a few phrases beyond the famous second sentence, says, "All experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable. So what he's saying is, it looks a little bit hard and opaque, but it's pretty simple. Heretofore, everybody was a subject under authoritarian rule. We are proposing something new. Not to be a superstitious peasant, not to be a subject, but to be this new thing called a citizen. This is brand new in the world. This is what we invented. But the implication is, by our disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable, is that many people will accept something, you know, to accept a lesser position. And so he's saying that participating in this new government is going to require kind of active engagement with it, which we call citizenship, to know about civics. And that just isn't 100 senators and 435 representatives, but it's how you get things done with other people, not alone, not telling them that they're evil, not telling them that they're stupid or small or crooked or whatever it is. It's like actually negotiating with people who may not share the same views as you. And so the things that made our country work: compromise, bipartisanship, agreement that certain things stopped at the borders, certain disagreements stopped at the edge, are all gone. And everybody's even more than a free agent. And what we have are no longer profiles in courage, with some very notable exceptions, and I am happy to discuss who I think are the heroes of the day. But I think that we have people who are actually more than happy to sort of ignore the shame of their behavior in favor of this short-term, immediate sort of winning. The novelist Richard Powers said, "The best arguments in the world," and my goodness, Paul, all we do is argue. "The best arguments in the world won't change anybody's point of view. The only thing that can do that is a good story." So as that amateur historian, but a storyteller, I fall back on the responsibility to continually and always try to figure out how you tell a story, not to preach to the converted, not to preach to the choir, but to ask everybody to come in and say, north, south, east, west, black, white, young, old, rich, poor, red state, blue state, whatever it might be, we share this story in common. And what, by watching it in common and digesting it in common, can we reinvigorate this notion of citizenship and civic responsibility, and to transcend the arguments that distract us and preoccupy us 24/7?
This is why we need to hear from you, especially now. Class is in session, and America needs
no,
to hear.
No homework.
But your homework is great homework, because I, you know, since last we spoke, your fantastic story about the American Buffalo came out, and I watched that with my 5-year-old and my 8-year-old, and that is the best kind of homework. And you've been the best kind of storyteller. And now your next, you know, project that you've been working on for years is about the American Revolution, but you feel like Paul Revere. I mean, I feel like you're ringing the bell. You're sounding the alarm. When Ken Burns is shining up his passport, we should all be concerned. And my question going into this, I had prepped in advance, and I consider you a very important guardian of democracy, right? You are an alarm sounder. You tell us about our better angels and what to watch out for. And you're kind of a doctor that can help heal America. And I was going to ask you, given your depth of understanding, how sick is our country right now? It feels very sick. And the question is it terminal? Is it savable? You know, are we going to have to lose a limb? Where are we? How do we fit it up in that historical context? I think you did that, but I also want to ask you to get to the core of it, because you and I were talking before we hit record about speaking to kids and how important it is. And I know you're going to do that later today. I wish there was mandatory service in America. I wish everyone had to coach I wish everyone had to coach a youth sport, and I wish everyone had to be the mystery reader in pre-K once a year because it'll connect you. But how sick are we? You're going to talk to kids, and in the framework of all of this, you know, give us the no shit from Ken Burns.
So it's really hard, the sort of headlines, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And so you want to say it's really sick. It's really a situation. But below the surface, it's all there. Everything is still working really well. And my passport isn't polished. My kids, maybe not so much, but I'm here. I want to be here and help right this ship. And what's happened to it is that we have become a prisoner of the same tyranny that we thought to throw off, we have become a prisoner of. And that is now disinformation and misinformation and the ability to say that up is down and down is up. And this is Orwellian, you know, this is what we have already been warned about can happen. And I'll tell you one thing, working on this history of the American Revolution, in between the Buffalo, which is past, and I'm so happy to hear you're watching with your family, still shocks me to think that this is the greatest slaughter of wildlife in the history of the planet. Not just the buffalo, but the grizzlies and the elks and the coyotes and the wolves and all of this. But it's on our watch. We're responsible for this beast that had 75 million, you know, roaming the entire continent to down where they couldn't find any. And the ones that were really around were in zoos and they had to repopulate. Now, good news is we're back from extinction. There's nearly 400,000 buffalo, but most of them are in feedlots for sustainable slaughter. So don't feel bad about eating a meat that's actually better than cattle. But are we back where Lewis and Clark has to wait an hour or two or three to watch a herd pass? No, and we will probably not get back there unless some people like American Prairie and the Nature Conservancy have their wish and create these great quarters where the buffalo can roam and the deer and the antelope can play. The film before the American Revolution is my first non-American topic on Leonardo da Vinci. Here is a human being who used 75% of our brain when everybody tells us we only use 10. And so you want to be like him. He's a scientist and an artist. There's no STEM or, you know, throw out the humanities. He's curious about everything. And in his story is the salvation of us. When we said pursuit of happiness, they did not say property, life, liberty, and property. They said pursuit of happiness. And they did not mean the acquisition of objects in a marketplace of things. They meant lifelong learning in a marketplace of ideas. John Adams said, I study war and politics so that my son may study commerce and industry so that my grandchildren can study art and music. I mean, that's the trajectory that we could be on, and we are not. We are mired in the simplistic dialectic of politics, and we just have to get out of there. We have to let those better angels obtain. And what is a better angel? Better angels look at the yes, no, the argument, and sees a subsuming whole. He says, you know, we must not be enemies, we must be friends. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. Then he harks back to the revolution. The mystic cords of memory stretching from every battlefield and patriot grave to every living heart and hearthstone all over this broad land will yet swell the chorus of the Union when again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature. He's in a southern city. It's March 61. He can't stop that war. But eventually we understood that this great, maybe now we think 750,000 people died in the Civil War, that he reminded us of the better angels, that the Duck Dynasty folks in their boats went and rescued black and brown people in Houston in floods, that when an idiot, a knucklehead, threw a rock in 1983 through the picture window of a Jewish family displaying a menorah in Billings, Montana. The Billings paper prints a full-page picture of a menorah, and thousands of Christian families put it up. That's what I'm talking about. That's where you can get back to those things where, you know, everybody's arguing about Christianity and nobody's practicing it. You know, this is postponing an actual practice, you know, and people say the opposite of faith is doubt. No, it isn't. Doubt is essential to faith to keep it active and moving. The opposite of faith is certainty. I know I'm right. You are wrong. That's back to the old argument thing. Only I am right, or my particular view is right. And we have to go back to a place. You can't be married with that attitude. You can't have kids with that attitude. You can't be friends with people. But somehow our politics and our civics, like, oh, that's okay. You know, the one of the great honorable parties of the United States is apparently filled with pedophiles and people who suck babies' blood, right? I mean, and therefore we cannot compromise with them. Although most of the job creation of the last 50 years has been under them, right? Mm-hmm. We've learned over and over that trickle-down doesn't work, and that actually having a uniform or relatively fairer tax system helps everybody. Massive, you know, low unemployment right now, growth, inflation finally coming down. But who is this person? Some senile old guy that, oh, isn't senile? Oh, wait, he's what is it? So we interpose between us and the truth and the ability to make a decision are lies and tissues of lies, to the point where there is a huge part of the country that is confused. And I think we've got to, if you are confused, then turn off your computer or just say, I am going to spend until this next election only looking at the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the New York Times. You know, you could name five other papers, but those, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, you could say, are the greatest papers in the world and fair. And their editorial pages are totally different from one another, but you could do that. And that I'm not going to watch cable as much as I did. I'm going to watch the nightly news.
PBS is what I would recommend.
Or the PBS NewsHour. Right? That's
News
what
NewsHour is still the greatest news program in America.
And then all of a sudden you begin to calm down. Your temperature is lower. The fuel rods that are about to melt down your reactor core are suddenly cooled. And suddenly you look at your neighbor who's got the sign of the guy you're not voting for, and he's not an evil person, you know? And so you have this possibility to begin to restore a kind of something that we share in common. And that is what's been lost, because we have had, and I'll tell you, you know, the stunning thing is, after the revolution, we realize the Articles of Confederation just don't work because we don't have a strong federal government. So we have a constitutional convention, and then we create this constitution, but immediately amend it with Bill of Rights to protect ourselves from some of the things that we were actually fighting for, right? Separation of church and state. And by the way, that's not atheists wanting to be separated from that. It's the religions themselves wanted to be disconnected from the state. They wanted it. And today you hear, oh, no, we've always been this nation and whatever. Yeah, but what denomination? Well, you know, any Christian, wait a second. They're diametrically opposed. It's a fool's errand, the freedom of speech, you know, all of these things that we instilled, but they were always trying to reverse engineer. But what if Thomas Jefferson writes from Paris to James Madison? But what if somebody fails to get reelected and lies about it and throws the country into confusion? So he and Madison are on one side of the political spectrum. On the other, or what's soon to be a big, Hamilton says, what if some unprincipled person should sow confusion about this and ride the storm and direct the whirlwind? He puts in quotes because he's quoting something else. So you have people all at the back. And for most of the history of this country, except in isolated portions in states and cities where there's a boss or Huey Long in Louisiana who actually got things done for the poor, didn't give tax breaks to the wealthy. He wanted to tax the wealthy and sort of even it out. Every man a king was his slogan. We've been able to avoid the terrors of dictators and the machinations of demagogues. Not so much anymore. And it is, you have to call out. I mean, this is the party of Abraham Lincoln has been kidnapped. And the people who still adhere to that are no longer part of that. And we have profiles and courage, not from men, right, who go off to battle. And we do not permit women to go in these combat situations, mostly or right up to now. Liz Cheney. Cassidy Hutchinson, people who have displayed unbelievable stuff. Mike Pence now too, but you've got a lot of people who have just acquiesced to a kind of pessimistic zero-sum game that helps to pervade this sense of pessimism from people. And even if they don't really believe the lie, that, well, they think they're not better off than they were 4 years ago when a million plus human beings were beginning to die from a mishandled pandemic, half of whom would be alive if it wasn't politicized or it wasn't advertised as what it was. If you tell Bob Woodward on the phone that this is five times worse than the flu and go out and say, it's nothing, it's not as bad as the flu, and to drink some stuff, you've condemned a lot of your own supporters and a lot of Americans to death. Whereas on the other hand, you have a guy who has had the third greatest legislative accomplishments of the last 100 years, dwarfed only by FDR and LBJ, who can't, you know, who people think has been this lame brain stuff. He's done stuff in which his opponents have voted against it and then gone home to their districts and touted what they did. And he doesn't care. He said, I took the oath of office. I'm the president of all Americans. If I pass something that benefits a red state, that's fine, even though I happen to be a blue state guy. And that kind of sincerity doesn't sort of play. So I think all of the people who gravitate to your wisdom, that gravitate to your impulse, all we're really saying is, it's not trying to go back. It's saying, where do you want to live? Do you want to live in, you know, the movie, It's a Wonderful Life, everybody knows. Do you want to live in Pottersville or do you want to live in Bedford Falls? That is the essential question before us. And I think I know what every American's answer would be if they could receive what I've just said cleanly. And then after that, if we save our country, then we can go and we can nitpick about this and I don't like this and there should be less government of that or more government there or whatever the argument, you can have them. But right now, there is an existential threat to the future of the United States of America, the greatest country ever and the first to proclaim the inalienable rights of all people. That's, I don't want that disappearing on my watch.
Thank you for that. For all of that. That needs to be broadcast across America and to every high school and to every American. And to your point, Ken, the story is so critical. And that's where, for better or worse, you know, for worse, Biden has lost the ability to convey that story. You just said it better than his surrogates did. You said it better than the partisans can, because you're trusted. And I think I'm glad you mentioned the heroes that you've talked about, because just this week, we had potentially another example in Representative Mike Gallagher, who was a Marine, who said he won't run for re-election. And he may single-handedly turn the power dynamic in Congress for the next couple of months. So we see these examples of people coming forward.
We're going to take a pause for a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
And now, we are back.
You know, you mentioned the Revolutionary War, but I want to take us back to another area of your expertise, because I just finished Empire of the Summer Moon, you know, the overlay, everything on the Buffalo and the Civil War and the transition time. And that book, you know, talks about the end of the Comanches and the end of this era after the Civil War. You're one of the greatest experts on the Civil War. Americans are afraid of a Civil War. A high percentage of Americans feel the Civil War. I want to ask Ken Burns, how afraid are you of a Civil War? Not how that, would you answer that question for that Americans? Much.
We have a lot of guns in this country, and that's a problem, and we see where it is. I think what happened in our Civil War was it wasn't really a civil war. It was a sectional war. Our revolution was a civil war where everybody was torn within families. And you had, Benjamin Franklin had a loyalist son, William, who was the governor, royal governor of New Jersey, was deposed and went to jail for a while and then presumed that he would go to England and safety and stayed and formed a terrorist organization that killed patriots. So, we are not without these antecedents in our thing, but I don't feel like it. I think that that's fear mongering. I think that the divisions within us are really divisions within each individual, and that we've lost our compass with regard to who we are. Now, we pulled out civics about 30 years ago. People complained about it. And education is now transactional rather than transformational. So, okay, the customer is always right. You don't want that. Then we said, it's got to be STEM. And that meant we could build a legion of automatons who know that 1 and 1 equals 2, but don't know from faith and reason and art and history and all the things that are in the humanities. And of course, religion is a huge part of the humanities, that 1 and 1 sometimes equals 3. That when we say that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, why don't we start saying, what is that thing? And it's not science, technology, engineering, or mathematics. It's something else. It's faith. It's art. It's relationship. It's love. And I live in New Hampshire. We are a big political state, right? We have the first in the nation primary. I have a yard sign out there, and it says, love multiplies. It's the only equation in the world that is in the universe. Forget the world. The world is too tiny and insignificant. It's the only equation that actually works. Love multiplies. That's it. Now, how do you practice that? It's at the heart of all the great religions. It's certainly at the heart of Christianity. So we have a lot of people calling themselves Christians who are into sort of Manichaean dynamics of good and bad and my way or the highway or whatever, all in the name of something that has no tolerance for that. It is, it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to reach the kingdom of heaven. Love your neighbor as thyself. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Now, I'm a humanist who suddenly crossed a border. No, that's what humanism is, We're all part of it, it's us. And that's, I what I've said, I think I've even said to you, and I excuse me for boring you to death, but, I have made films for the last nearly 50 years about the U.S., but I've also made films about us. That is to say, the two-letter lowercase plural pronoun, all of the intimacy of us and we and our, and all of the majesty, the complexity, the contradiction, and even the controversy of the U.S. It is a privilege, Paul, to have spent my entire professional life operating within that sphere. I know the power and the majesty and the glory of the American people and the American project, the American experience, and I know the ways in which we've gone wrong. Lincoln predicted it, by these two mighty oceans, we're protected. Two relatively benign neighbors, North and South, we're protected. So we incubate great ideas, but we also incubate other things that aren't so great. The love of money, the worship of guns, the sort of the violence, the sense of, if I just make a them, an othering of people. But what I've learned in 50 years of doing that with regard to the U.S. and us, there's only us. There's no them. And if you see someone out in front of you through your windshield, whatever you count as your windshield, a computer screen, a phone, the car windshield, if you see someone out there making a them, making an enemy of some other human being, because we all know from our religious as well as the founding of our country, the sanctity of each individual life, run away from the person who's making a them. Don't need that. It is not the time now. It is the time actually to say, I've got my oar. I'm going to put it in the water and I'm going to look to my left and my right and I'm or my right and I'm going to pull at the same time in the same direction. Doesn't mean you have to agree with everybody. Doesn't mean that. But this idea that we have created these huge monsters in the other, just they just don't exist.
Ken, but we are so thankful and grateful that you exist. I mean, I love all of your incredible work, but I wish we didn't lose you into these spaces where you're creative and you were out. I wish you were a senator. I wish you were elected to government. I wish you were in the public eye, just making sense of it all. I looked up in advance that you have never been awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Is that correct? I believe. Yeah, I think that's something that we should all be pushing for, because I feel like what you're doing, especially in this moment, is so critical. And I was going to ask you, what do you think people should do? But you're constantly answering that question before I even ask it. But I do think we have to elevate voices of reason and voices of like yours that are so universally trusted. This is Independent Americans. We know independence will sway the election this year and maybe the next few elections. Are you able to share? I mean, I think we can all deduce from, but who you're voting for?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I do not agree with a good deal, but there is only one person that has our republic in mind, and that's Joe Biden. The other person does not. They have said they've talked about establishing a dictatorship. He has talked about his admiration for Viktor Orban in Hungary, who has taken over the press, who has suppressed minorities, who has sold off the main industries to cronies, you know, given them the stuff that the courts have been co-opted. It is a tiny country. It has 10 million people. It doesn't have 350 million people. And it's more or less homogeneous rather than the heterogeneous nature of all of us. Chaos ensues from anything that he does. He loves Putin, right? Who just showed us how vulnerable he is, in fact, to an attack by ISIS, which he's saying is blaming it on Ukraine, which is back to Orwell. He likes Xi, a powerful guy who runs, you know, the world's largest dictatorship. He likes Kim Jong-un, who took his own uncle and murdered him because he worried that he was a threat to the. These are his four horsemen of the apocalypse that he's for. And you do not want this person running our thing, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. And you're absolutely right. Independence will do this. And if you go back, just because it's not that Joe Biden hasn't been able to deliver his message, he's there doing it. It's that we don't cover it. If it bleeds, it leads. We have always parked our cameras at the hangar where this private plane is going to show up and somebody will say something outrageous. And we want to hear that outrageous thing. We don't want to hear that I've cut poverty significantly. We have more people employed than at any time in our history. I have created 14 million new jobs. There are 850,000 manufacturing jobs, which of course bring 10 more jobs with them, high level, back to the United States. I have taken the manufacture of chips away from both allies and others to do it here. I have accomplished more in these 4 years or 3 years than anybody else except Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson, who remade the American contract more than any other president. So if you like your Social Security, you thank Franklin Roosevelt for that. If you like the national parks, thank Franklin Roosevelt for expanding them and putting them all under one thing. If you like the idea of national service, he started the Civilian Conservation Corps and put hundreds of thousands of young men and women to work in our national parks and in state parks and all around building things. He built 10,000 airports and landing strips, 10,000. He planted 1 billion trees. Do you like your Medicare? Do you like your Medicaid? That's LBJ, right? And the most successful addition to that has been the Affordable Care Act, which has just exploded in the last 2 months with millions and millions of more people coming in. This is not some guy telling you that immigrants are vermin, that we're all immigrants, unless you're Native American. And even we know from anthropologists that they came over a land bridge from East Asia. You're an immigrant. And how can someone be illegal? All human beings have value. Our God, our Savior, and our government tell us. Our founding documents tell us. So why is somebody bad blood? It's poisoning. These are all the languages that everybody is riffing off that were, you know, have been born, have been the lingua franca of dictators for as long. But unfortunately, too many of them are the words of Adolf Hitler. And you just have to come out and say it. Apparently, he has not read Mein Kampf. I tend to believe him because he doesn't read. But apparently, the only book that has been cited at Trump Tower back in the 80s and 90s were the speeches of Adolf Hitler, who traveled in his own plane from mid-sized, not big cities, mid-sized city to saying, let's essentially make Germany great again. Mm. You know, be careful of being seduced by someone who has an easy answer. It's super complicated to do this. And the deep state, it doesn't exist. If the deep state existed, he'd be gone a long time ago. Mm. He'd be disappeared if the deep state existed. It doesn't. The deep state is actually those moneyed interests in whose interest it is to have that authoritarian rule where mankind is more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable. And what did he do? He passed a tax break for wealthy friends. He put ideologues on the Supreme Court, who then for the first time have restricted, like it's the first time since Prohibition, have restricted individual freedom in the United States. Restricted it, pulled it back, made it less free, and promises to be a dictator for day one. There's never been a dictator who's a dictator for day one. Mm. Those days, unless they're, you know, really long days. Mm.
Ken, you are the great American storyteller, and you just told that story better than I've ever heard anybody in the Biden campaign do it. They'd be smart to put you on staff for the next 2 years and just amplify your power to tell their story. But I think the why it's so resonant is because they didn't, and because you're a guardian of our democracy and of our culture and a mirror for us all. And we need your voice now more than ever. I am so grateful for every conversation we have. I hope you'll come back again. I'm glad that you're leaving us to go talk to kids because they need to hear this from you. But I think, Ken, I think there are a few voices that are more trusted than yours and that'll resonate more in the next few months than yours. So I hope this is an episode that goes far and wide and a lot of folks hear it because Ken Burns is the beating heart of our country and you just laid it down for us. So I am really, really grateful for your honesty and your candor and for your emotion, for letting it go and saying what you really feel. Because a lot of people who've had a career like yours would sit on the sidelines and stay safe.
I think that there's something where there's a kind of spiritual malaise that isn't solved with thou shall not do, but solved by looking inward and seeing that many of my frustrations and what I blame on the other or the outer life are really a product of my own failings, and that my wish for something apocalyptic, that may be fun if you go to the movies and see the White House blown up or you see this or whatever, but it actually isn't us. We're all about helping each other. You know, we had a big storm up here, you know, dumped tons of thing, and my roof got a leak. And there are guys climbing up over my roof right now. I'm sure they don't agree with me, but we agree with each other that we're in this together. Mm-hmm. And that's the most important thing to understand. Will you be able to look somebody in the eye if you find out that one of the number one priorities of the previous president's next administration, if he is given that, is to lock up 15 million people in concentration camps? We need those immigrants. Our businesses are screaming for those immigrants. And by demonizing, the American people commit crimes at a much higher percentage than immigrants streaming over the border. But if you turn them into some horde of a zombie movie, then everybody, and let me tell you that the most diverse places in America, Brooklyn and Queens, the two most populous thing, have more people than ever, and they're for immigrants. The people that aren't for immigrants don't see immigrants. They've only been frightened by the notion of immigrants. And remember, look in the mirror if you want to, unless you're Native American, you know, if you hate an immigrant, then look in the mirror. And maybe the spiritual, the internal stuff is where we should be looking inward. You know, Lincoln's inaugural that I quoted from is about the absurdity of secession. Because if a state can secede from a nation, then a county can secede from a state, and then a city can secede from a county, and a neighborhood can secede from a city, and a clan can secede from that neighborhood, and a family can secede from that clan, and a person can secede, and then you're in your own mental illness. And I'm afraid what our social media does has plowed us quicker to where what we think is going on outside is actually going in. And as you know, the doctrine goes, heal thyself. Everything else will take, you know, vote for the guy who isn't looking for credit.
Mm.
Vote for the guy who isn't looking for credit.
Mm. Well, it's another reason to vote for you, which I know you will smile and laugh at, but I am serious about the fact that we need your voice so badly right now. And I'm so thankful that you've shared it again with me and with our audience and with our country. I am so grateful for all of the conversations that you generate, and this one might be the most important one that we've ever had in the next couple of months. So,
yeah, I wish it wasn't true, my friend, but I think it may be. It just, you know, now, what do they say? What's that thing? Now is the time for all good people to come to the aid of their country. That's it.
Well, if you need more people to shovel you out, I'm sure you'll have no shortage of
volunteers. We're good, but we do have to fix the leak and the periodic every 3 hours. I feel like a father with a newborn every 3 hours going off that I have.
Well, there's a lot, you know. We need your house not to leak. There's a lot of valuable stuff in there that's going to help tell the next story. And the leak in your house is a little more serious than in the average house in New Hampshire.
But you know what? Stuff happens, and there are people who don't have houses. And I was trying to say that to my youngest, who got anxious about it. And I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a pot and we're going to put it under the drip. And if you can hear the drip, I'm going to put paper towel in the bottom of the pot. And we're going to close the door and we're going to say how lucky we are that we have each other, that we have a roof. And if the whole thing caves in, we'll come out to the barn and sleep here tonight. And she goes, oh, this could be fun. I said, it's already fun. Look, we're just dealing with it. So
can you do fireside chats every week for America? Can you be everyone's grandfather, please, for the next couple of years?
So what FDR did is he knew that few and far between. We sort of think, oh, fireside chats every week. You know, maybe I don't know the number. I can't remember now from our Roosevelt series, but it's like 17. But everybody says, oh, we always listened all the time. And it's because he leaned in and he just said, let me see if I can explain to you what the banking system is like. And this is on a cold Sunday night. There's been runs on the banks. There's a national bank holiday. And the next morning, Monday morning, Americans put their money back in the bank. And I am just pleading with my fellow citizens to live in Bedford Falls, not Potterville, to put up the menorah in your plate glass window and go and take the money you pulled out of your bank out of fear and put it back in your bank of hope.
I'm ending with that because you can say it better than anyone can. Thank you for all you do, my friend. Thank you for your leadership and for your sacrifice and for your wisdom and for your courage. We are so thankful that you are there for all of us.
Thank you, my friend Paul.
I look forward to the next time. I'll be on my way up to New Hampshire to help dig. And until then, stay vigilant.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you, Chester.
Yeah, he's always a good boy.
Thank you, Chester. Good boy, Chester. We need you too, buddy. Thank you, Ken.
Okay, great. Take care, Paul.
Powered by Righteous Media.